1989 documentary, Tongues Untied, which focused specifically on the uniqueness of gay black identity. I thought about my uncle. I thought of all the gay black men of my own generation living with HIV. I thought about some of those I knew who had lost their lives in recent years to AIDS. I thought about my paranoia about becoming one of those people. I thought about how I learned to stop allowing that paranoia, that fear of dying, to prevent me from living. That feeling was with me the next time I went back to the museum to speak at an event organized for gay black men who had launched their group with the intent to instill a greater sense of community among queer, gay, and bisexual men. I was asked to talk about creative expression. I assumed they wanted me to talk about writing for a living, but to be blunt, as an essay hustler whose work is largely made up of responding to awful people and their horrible antics in pop culture and politics, I increasingly found myself exhausted from both the news and humanity. Still, I agreed, because I felt it was important to be a part of something with that sort of mission, even if I was a bit grouchy. I had every intention of planning a formal talk, but in actuality, I didn't come up with even a general idea of what it was I wanted to say until minutes before I arrived. Thankfully, they didn't notice. So I just talked about myself and my background, how I initially wanted to be a news anchor, and how I kind of fell into writing full-time. How I wanted to write books and be on television and offer a perspective I felt was missing. Working class, southern, black, gay country, twerk friendly, and so forth. As I spoke more, I remembered that even in the midst of my frustrations, I did have a purpose. I wanted to make people laugh and make people think. I wanted to write and say things that I hoped would make it better for those who came after me. And yes, I talked about my family, religion, boys, and stigmas. After I finished, someone came up to me and said, "I mean no disrespect, I really enjoyed your talk. I will say one word though. Pain." He said no disrespect because he worried I would react the wrong way and pop off on him, I guess. I didn't take offense. Why would I? Shortly before that talk, I had spoken at a panel on the HIV/AIDS crisis in the black community. In both cases, I was honest about my experiences and forthright about how they impacted me. Some people cried, but I didn't. I didn't need to, because I'm all cried out about that. That's not where my head is anymore. I used to worry so much about coming across as sad. I feared that I would be adding to a lingering narrative about people like me. I learned to stop fixating on that so much. Some parts of my life are sad, but I am not a sad spirit. As I explained to the guy, it's fine that you heard pain, but what matters is that I'm able to speak about it without breaking down, and with hope. Even if he didn't want to say it explicitly, I think he anticipated me speaking about my life in a way that ended with a pretty little bow around it. I get it. When people talk about their lives, in speeches, on panels, in memoirs and documentaries, and the like, you're often given some ending that's packaged that way. You're typically given something that leaves you feeling all warm and fuzzy. I aim to inspire and be inspired, but I don't necessarily have to speak about my life through that kind of filter. In the past, there were days when I didn't want to get out of bed. I struggled emotionally because I refused to deal with my anger, with my self-loathing, and with my insecurities about my sexuality and so many aspects of my childhood. I would so easily just keep going, and took the approach that I would get back to all that eventually. Eventually never came, and I suffered as a result of it. There were times when I tried to convince myself that I was trying to change, but in reality, it was just me talking rather than actually doing. But I have done the work now. Still, I have a few remaining concerns. I don't know how some things will work out with respect to my folks. I do wish my mom would be like, "I talked to Jesus, and he said it's cool. I mean, I got the sugar, and you got the sugar in your tank. It's all good." But at the same time, whatever happens, happens. I am not in control of that. I don't know what day I'll pay off my damn student loans, but oof, how I long for that shit. To that point, every now and then, I worry that I should have taken up escorting as a minor in college to put off these private student loans. It's never too late to mumble rap, though. And there are moments when I play a certain R&B song and think, damn, I'm single as shit. Still. Speaking of R&B, as an intern way back in 2003, I met Mary J. Blige. Her My Life album has always meant so much to me. It is my all-time favorite album. I have long given it partial credit for keeping me alive and pushing me to work hard so I could thrive and enjoy life. I got to meet her interning at Magic 102 in Houston. She was there to promote her Love and Life album, which was a lot better than a lot of y'all gave it credit for. The DJ I worked under, Candy Eastman, had stepped out of the studio for a second, and Mary entered. It was just me and her. She entered the room wearing an all-white jacket and a big smile. "Hey," she said. "How you doing?" Before I could even answer, Mary extended her arms and gave me the biggest hug. Maybe she thought I was the DJ, but who cares? I was hugging Mary without having to post bail as a result. "I have something I wanted to share with you," I said, "whenever you find the time to read it." "Cool," she answered. She placed a letter in her Louis Vuitton bag. She did the interview and that was that. I wasn't sure if she actually read the letter or if it would just end up in the trash. "Your album was the first album I ever purchased, and I've been playing it nonstop for 9 years. Even when I didn't understand every single thing you were talking about, I could feel your sadness and it helped me cope with my own. You've helped keep me sane and want to keep going. I know what it's like to feel miserable and in love. I know what it's like to have people constantly criticize you. And I understand what it's like to want to be happy, but simply can't be. I know it's mainly women that admire you, but I wanted you to know that I, too, appreciate the honesty in your work and the fact that you've been brave enough to be so open throughout your career." A week later, I was in Los Angeles at the Staples Center watching a charity basketball game. During halftime, I picked up my phone and saw that I had a voicemail. "Michael, how you doing? This is Mary J. Blige." My eyes lit up and I almost fell out of my chair. "I read your letter finally," Mary said. Her voice was wavering. It sounded like she wanted to cry. "I just want to say to you, you have no idea. You made my day. You made it to where I want to go on. I thank God for you in this letter." I was stunned. She even left a number for me to call her back. When I called her back, her then fiance Kendu answered the phone. I could hear Mary grab the phone when her soon-to-be husband said my name. "Hello," she asked. "Hey, this is Michael. I'm the one who wrote you the letter. In Houston?" "Hey, Michael," she said. "I remember you. Thank you for taking the time to read my letter." "No, Michael. Thank you for writing it." She went on to say, "You will find someone just as beautiful as you are." After that call, I realized I could make a connection with people through my writing. I write all that to say, I'm still single, Mary J. Blige. Where is this person you promised? Also, I'm so mad at Kendu. I'll never not be mad. I love you, queen. But no, my life isn't perfect. There are still some things I would like to change. However, what has changed is that while everything isn't ideal, when is it ever really? I don't worry the way I used to. It's natural to have moments of doubt, but what keeps us going is faith. When I rejected the religion I was raised in, I struggled because I didn't formulate any other belief system. That is no longer the case. I do believe in a God, but more than anything, I believe in me. No matter what comes my way, and no matter what happens around me, I am going to be okay. I always have been. I always will be. I was never looking for a happy ending anyway. What I've been longing for is a new beginning. I've settled on the reality that I can't date Jesus, but I can have the life of my choosing. It took me longer than most to realize that, but I've long been a late bloomer. And better late than never.
I can't date Jesus. Love, Sex, Family, Race, and Other Reasons I Put My Faith in Beyoncé was written and read by Michael Arsenault. It was recorded by Abita Austin and Noriko Okabe at Simon & Schuster in New York. Editing and post-production by Fenn Eichner. The associate producer was Aaron Larson. I Can't Date Jesus was produced and directed by Tiffany Ferrari. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio. I Can't Date Jesus, Love, Sex, Family, Race, and Other Reasons I've Put My Faith in Beyoncé is available in print from Atria 37 Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.